As much of the nation returns to various forms of normalcy despite the ongoing threat of COVID-19, there's a lot that's still far from normal. From the challenges of working from home to attempts to legally immunize houses of worship from any health restrictions whatsoever, even as many of those attending them refuse actual medical immunization, this pandemic, which has claimed at least 560,000 Americans, has changed things for all of us. For a look at what the road ahead may look like, I'm happy to be joined once again by my good friend, Rabbi Jack Moline, president of Interfaith Alliance. Jack, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
It's good to be here as a guest, Welton. I'm glad you're back in the saddle.
Thank you. I start with the work from home angle because I know Interfaith Alliance has been operating in this way for over a year now. What has that changed in how you do things individually and as a team?
Well, you know, we bemoan constantly when we meet every day at our inability to just interact with each other casually. We need to keep lists of what we have to talk about. We have to schedule opportunities to speak either face-to-face or on the telephone. And there is an ethos to our work that is energized by the interaction that we can have on a day-to-day basis. And that's missing. We work very hard at maintaining it. And now that almost everyone on our staff has been vaccinated, we're talking about how we might recapture some of that, at least occasionally.
Hmm. Jack, are most of our partner organizations doing something similar?
To the best of my knowledge, none of the groups we work with are back in their physical offices on a full-time basis. Some of them, like us, have had the good fortune to be able to scale back on the space that we have operated out of without giving up the benefits of having a street address and a support staff in the building and the like. Mm-hmm. But I know that a lot of them are debating now how they're going to return to a sense of normalcy whenever this pandemic and its restrictions have abated. So, yes, everybody's in the same boat.
Mm. You mentioned the lawmakers, and I wanted to talk about relationships with them. Traditionally, face-to-face engagement has been a core part of advocacy on the Hill. What is happening there?
You know, necessity is the mother of invention, and in these times, we have to be creative. The District of Columbia undertook a renovation of Union Station, the train terminal that is just off of Capitol Hill. And part of what they did was to open up the lobby and take out everything that was in there. There had been a couple of restaurants and some kiosks and stuff like that, and it's now just a large, magnificent space. Large enough, as I discovered, to ride a bicycle in, not personally, but I saw people riding bicycles around the lobby of Union Station. Now, there's a point to this story, I promise. When a group of us collected signatures in support of the Equality Act, we wanted to present them to a member of the Judiciary Committee, and Senator Chris Coons of Delaware was very gracious in being willing to accept it. We couldn't go to his office, and we couldn't meet him in close quarters. So we met with him in the lobby of in the Great Hall of Union Station while he was on his way to a train to take him back to his home in Wilmington. Hmm. So we do the best we can. I know that Katie Joseph, our policy and education director, has had a lot of meetings on Zoom and other platforms with staff members that otherwise might have been just drop-ins as we roamed Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have to tell you what, we already had to do some of this work from years and years ago when the ricin scare was on Capitol Hill, and they changed all of the mail protocols. Mm. So you can't mail a letter to Capitol Hill anymore if you wanted to get there on time. So we had to go back to older technology like fax and newer technology like email, and sometimes just dropping off a letter in a congressional office. So we're adapting to this as well.
Mm. I want to get some insights into how some special interests have been trying to leverage the pandemic to create broad religious exemptions from public health regulations. Would you talk about the work Interfaith Alliance and its partners are doing on that front?
You know, religious communities and particularly religious institutions have two very important roles to play. The first is to make clear that from a faith point of view, which is so important to so many Americans, that protecting yourself from the coronavirus by observing public health protocols and getting a vaccine is a responsibility of a faithful practitioner, because you care not only for the life with which you've been entrusted, but you care for the lives around you by making sure that you are not the agent of somebody else's misery. So for houses of worship to be out front and aggressive about that is enormously important. At the same time, a house of worship needs to model for the rest of the country, for commercial institutions, for social groups, even for families, what the wise course of action is, even in the face of essential and desirable gatherings. And we unfortunately have cohorts of people in this country, and I'm sad to say that many of them are part of faith communities, and sadder to say that many of them part of faith communities that are devout in their practice, who believe that there is or there ought to be an exemption for them gathering for spiritual purposes, for sacred purposes, as if there were some protection that came from prayer or reflection or meditation or study. There isn't. And people who believe that, and I rarely say this about any faith tradition, but people who believe that prayer is going to protect them from this virus are simply wrong.
Yeah.
And while it is absolutely correct that for the spiritual nourishment of the soul, participation in communion or in a minyan or in Juma prayers is something that is nurturing, all of those things can be compensated for in ways that being an agent of contagion cannot be compensated for. Yeah. And so we have resisted the notion that there is some special privilege that pertains to houses of worship, and have pushed back against the unfortunate statements that have come from some of our Supreme Court justices on the privileged place that religious institutions ought to have in public health considerations.
You know, we have found that a lot of leadership in the religious community doesn't mind cheapening the role of religion in public life. And we're seeing that, I'm sad to say.
It is correct. And I introduce a point of sort of personal privilege here. If anybody is watching the video of this, they see that it looks like I was picked up off the street because my hair is a mess and my beard is scruffy. I've just emerged from a period of mourning for my mother, who died 2 weeks ago. Today, the day we're taping this, would have been her 93rd birthday. But I was crucially aware of the role that my faith tradition played in supporting me through my bereavement mm-hmm. and my mourning period, even though I could not observe the traditional Shiva, the 7 days of mourning, in the way that I did for my father 30 years ago, when our house was filled from dawn to dark by hundreds of people who came to express their condolence. I was mostly alone that week, except for one or two people at a time who made appointments to come and see me. I understand that being sustained in moments of crisis, whether they're emotional or physical, is an important function of faith and of religious communities. But man, I want to be here to provide that comfort for people and to do that in a way that doesn't require a pastoral visit to a hospital.
Hmm. You mentioned the Supreme Court. That is another issue that has a lot of us concerned on the question of special rights for religious Americans tailored to the needs of particular Christian traditions. Some see Amy Coney Barrett playing a key role. How closely have you been able to watch this? I know you've had many other things on mind.
I think all of the justices who came to the court under the previous administration have lived up to the concerns that we expressed when they were being vetted, nominated, and confirmed. Amy Coney Barrett is certainly one of them. Justice Neil Gorsuch is is sort of in the forefront recently of some of the decisions that have come out of the what's called the shadow docket for the Supreme Court, where he has affirmed a special place of privilege for faith communities in U.S. jurisprudence and enforcement of laws. It's not a surprise, but it is still a disappointment because the result is that the wonderful hope that we can protect the special place that religion has in the hearts and minds of a lot of Americans is resulting in negative impacts on people who don't share a specific set of religious beliefs that that seem to be the template for those three justices in particular.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us had concerns about the perspective that Justice Scalia brought with him to the court out of his very devout Catholicism. But he was very much an honest broker compared to what we're seeing now.
Mm. You mentioned the Equality Act. I'd just like listeners to hear a reminder from you of why an organization like the Alliance continues to make this a priority.
We get that question a lot because people want to know what your sexual orientation has to do with our emphasis on the First Amendment. And I want to remind everybody, and when you have a conversation with anybody about the Equality Act, I think it's important to introduce this point. Almost all of the objections to equality in this country as it relates to LGBTQI plus individuals comes from a religious perspective that somehow it is the divine intention that people be sexually oriented in a particular and immutable way. You will rarely hear anybody arguing from a secular point of view that that there is something in secular terms that is objectionable about being homosexual or transgender or queer in any sense of the word. It always comes from that old saw that is no longer amusing, that God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And the application of certain biblical verses, mostly out of context, is what underpins groups like the Family Research Council and their allies who object to extending the same rights and privileges to Americans of differing orientation as they do to heterosexual individuals. Mm-hmm. And so it is a religious freedom issue because nobody is being denied the right to marry by the Secular Coalition of America.
Yeah.
It is the Family Research Council and groups like that that are our problem.
Jack, I don't want to forget, so I'm going to say it right now, the importance of you reminding our listeners about the web series that you're hosting, the American Purpose. Say a word or two about that to our people.
Well, if you listen to any of them, you know that I begin each one with an introduction that acknowledges the book that Henry Luce edited back in 1960, 61 years ago, called The National Purpose, in which he asked 10 white men of a certain age to talk about what the purpose of America was. There was a sense at that point, it was toward the end of the Eisenhower administration and before the Kennedy administration, that America had lost its way and that we needed to come back to something that would inspire our purpose. And not surprisingly at that point, when communism was on the rise and people were tired from the efforts of World War II and sort of coasted through the 50s, there was a sense that God, family, work, and patriotism were the four ingredients that we needed to move forward. And they certainly were for the people who wrote, like Billy Graham and David Sarnoff and Archibald MacLeish, Adlai Stevenson. Excellent essays, all of them, but all of a kind.
Yeah,
I was just fascinated at what that volume might look like today and was very fortunate to get acceptance from a dozen people who represent a much more diverse America than that original cohort, who have talked to me about what their vision of the original American purpose was, whether it still applies today, and what our purpose ought to be going forward. And go to AmericanPurpose.org. You will see almost all of our episodes to this point posted there. We have two more that haven't been let loose on Facebook Live. They air Wednesdays at 1 o'clock, and then they're resident on our website, both interfaithalliance.org and AmericanPurpose.org. And you will hear remarkable people like Reverend Kelly Brown Douglas and Pastor Mike McBride and Wajahat Ali and Simranjeet Singh. This past week, we had Whit Ayers and Stan Greenberg together. Mm-hmm. The preeminent Republican and Democratic pollsters, respectively, talking about what they know of the years of study of the American public. And we kicked off the series with Senator Tammy Baldwin, and we're concluding it with Senator Chris Coons, both of whom were remarkable. Yeah. I am so energized by this, Welton, I can't tell you, and I'm looking forward to doing a second season, starting sometime late in the summer, I think.
Good. That's very good. Well, I know you can't be really sure that you can answer this question, but what do you think will be the heavy major kinds of things that you will be doing in the months ahead? Is it one thing? Is it a lot of things? What do you think?
I don't want people to think that we're sort of treading the same ground over and over again, even though a lot of what we talk about is what we've been talking about through the previous administration and even before that. But with Congress configured the way it is, which is both a positive and a negative, many of the legislative initiatives about hate crimes, about travel accessibility, about healthcare, and certainly about equality issues, especially as it relates to marriage and adoption, are not just sort of pie in the sky aspirations now. There is legislation that will pass the House, I think, pretty easily, but will be a much heavier lift in the Senate because of the very narrow majority that our side holds on a lot of these issues. So that's where a lot of our efforts are going to be. I would remind people that what we're doing now is debating actual legislation because we have leadership that is allowing these debates to come to the floor of the Senate, whereas before they were being frustrated, sometimes even before they got to committee. And so we are working very hard to talk to anybody who will listen to us on Capitol Hill about the importance of an honest exchange that results in a legislative referendum. And what happens over the next 18 months in Congress will have a huge impact on what Congress and the Senate will look like in the second 2 years of the Biden administration, and what that will mean for these kinds of religious freedom issues and other issues as well. So that's what we're focused on. And my hope is that we'll be successful. And of course, you know, there are perennial issues. You will, I'm sure, be talking about the National Day of Prayer and Meditation, which is coming up next month. We've already initiated talks with the administration on how that can be promoted appropriately in a country that constitutionally is not supposed to take a stand on the establishment of religion, and what that means both in terms of supporting the population and supporting the laws that govern them. So we're working on all of that stuff as well.
Well, let me finish with a question that can be answered with absoluteness. Interfaith Alliance needs members, supporters, money, activists. We need people like the people who listen to this show. And I can't let you go without saying how important it is that all of that comes together around Interfaith Alliance and your leadership.
Well, thanks. Well, you've already said it. So let me suggest, as you do at the end of every episode, you suggest that people share what they've heard that they've liked with a friend and bring somebody else into the family that listens to State of Belief each week. I've had, interestingly enough, three calls just in the past couple of weeks, and I wasn't around much the last few weeks, from groups in different cities that would like to affiliate in some way with Interfaith Alliance. There is strength in numbers, and there is a great possibility for us to have an impact, not just nationally, but at least as importantly on a state and local level, if like-minded people will come together and just focus on one or two religious freedom issues that will keep these matters at the top of mind for state and local legislators. Retail politics at the local level is much more accessible than Capitol Hill, even now that they're taking down some of the fences. And we have the resources to help people achieve and accomplish what they need in order to live a life of integrity under the provisions of the national constitution and their state constitutions. So in addition to all those things, money, membership, calling your representatives, all those kinds of things, find a few friends. They don't have to be clergy. They don't even have to be religiously active on a regular basis. They just need to be concerned about these issues, and we'll support you in forming the Interfaith Alliance of Podunkville. We'd be happy to do it.
Rabbi Jack Moline is president of Interfaith Alliance, defending true religious freedom for all. A great man, a great friend. Jack, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Welton, as I say every time, it is always a great pleasure to have a conversation with you.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your donations help keep us on the air. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift as we celebrate 15 years of continuous broadcasting. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and company. I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week. person whom you think this might be helpful for. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man, you see.